Now, you may recognise our first guest from Channel 4's Embarrassing Bodies programme. Well, she's here to urge us to start investing in our health now to improve our chances of enjoying our latter years to the full. To tell us about her new book, Live Well to 101, A Practical Guide to Achieving a Long and Healthy Life, welcome to the show, Dr. Dawn Harper. Hi, Dawn.
Thank you for having me. Hello, how are you?
You're welcome. I'm just so glad you answered the phone. I'm not a cold caller, I'm an interviewer.
You're a very welcome call.
Ah, bless you. Now, we all know that we're living longer. I believe, is it a girl can now live averagely to their 83rd birthday and a man in their 80th year? But you say that it doesn't necessarily mean that we're living well.
No, so actually, you know, life expectancy has gone up for generations now, and healthy life expectancy has gone up, but at a much slower rate. And so what that means in real terms, sadly, is that the vast majority of us actually are living our last years and sometimes decades with chronic illness and often in chronic pain and with perhaps poor quality of life. And it kind of struck me, and it's a hideous story really, but I was at a GP meeting and we were discussing how the health service in the UK was going to cope with this increasingly elderly population. And one of my colleagues said, you see, the problem is we're not really living longer, are we? And I said, well, yes, we are. That's kind of quite well documented, we are. And she said, no, we're not, Dawn, we're just taking longer to die.
Oh, yeah.
And I was utterly horrified, you know. Yeah. But as I drove away from that meeting, I started thinking about the many, many patients in my list who are really quite incapacitated and they're not enjoying their latter years. Mm-hmm. And it made me think about all the things that influence, you know, why we might live a long and healthy life. And of course, our genetics play, you know, a big role, and the way we live our lives, the obvious things like diet and exercise and smoking and alcohol. But the more I researched it, the more I looked into all the other different aspects that can affect our longevity, and the more it made me realize that actually we can make a massive difference for very little investment. And that was where the book was born.
Yeah, because there's no point living longer if you're not enjoying it, is there? I think I'd rather die a little earlier and not have to suffer.
Well, and I think also, I mean, one of the things that my, you know, post-middle-age patients worry about a lot is dementia. Mm. And I've been talking to a lot of them about, you know, who wants to live to receive that birthday card from the Queen on their 100th birthday, but not really have any significance of what that's about,
yeah.
You know. So I think it's, you know, it's basically investing now for a healthy longevity, and it's not, it's absolutely not about giving up everything that you love so it just feels like you're living longer, you know, or trying to achieve really crazy targets. You know, there are people, you know, post-retirement who are still running marathons, but those are not your average people, and what this book is about is talking to the average person with the average lifestyle and time constraints and willpower and all those things. So it's small, achievable steps which I believe are achievable and sustainable and could make a huge difference to our future.
So can you give us some examples then of what we can do?
Yes, okay. So, okay, let me give you probably my top five. When researching this book, I went to interview lots of different centenarians who are living independently and well, both in the UK and on the continent. And they had incredibly different backgrounds. You know, some were rich, some were poor, some lived in rural locations, some lived in very urban environments. And they'd had very different upbringings, but they had several things that were that they kept in common. I think the first is that they moved, and that sounds a bit daft, but the vast majority of these people, you know, hadn't had motor cars when they were children. They walked everywhere. You know, there's no way they needed to count their recommended 10,000 steps a day because they couldn't get through their day without doing way more than 10,000 steps a day. So they didn't look at exercise as, you know, a game of squash on a Friday night or a Zumba class on a Wednesday morning. You know, not that I'm knocking those are great, and absolutely we should be doing them. But it was just about being active, so moving, walking, moving more. And they still do. These people were still walking to catch the bus. They were going for a walk in the afternoon. They're walking down to the street square to meet friends, which is probably going to bring me to my second one, and that is social networks. There's been quite a lot of research into the impact of maintaining social networks on healthy longevity. And every single one of these healthy centenarians that I met were keeping in touch with friends and family. They were really very sociable people. Some of that socialisation was done via internet, via telephone, but a lot of it was face-to-face, and they made a real effort to do that, and I really believe that's a huge thing. So keeping moving, keeping in touch with friends, and positive attitudes. You know, they were real glass-half-full people, all of them. Some of them had had quite tough lives, but they had really positive attitude. So one of my tips to people is to say, do something to make you smile each day. And if that's a little bit of me time, that's not a bad thing.
Course,
you know, I think
yeah.
we all live in a rat race today.
Yeah.
And sometimes actually the things that really matter, friends and family, get put down the agenda. And I think the other thing that really struck me was these people tended to eat seasonally.
Okay.
And they lots of vegetables. I've really changed my diet as a result of the research that I did writing this book, such that I think it's what we call flexitarian these days, but I very much, I do eat meat, but not very much. I eat quite a lot of fish, but basically my diet is plant-based, and I've shifted my emphasis now, so that instead of thinking of the protein on my plate is the main part and the vegetables is the side dish, the protein in my meals now is the side dish. So it's very much plant orientated.
Okay. That's a flexitarian, is it?
It's called a flexitarian, apparently, yes. Yeah. So you're eating mainly vegetarian food, mainly plant. It's plant-based eating, but allowing yourself a bit of meat when you want it, or fish. So it's a new term, I'm told.
Oh.
Flexitarian.
Okay, learned something there. Excellent.
Yes, I mean those are the basics, you know. But there was some amazing studies I came across. So I found one where a team researcher had gone back and looked at team photographs in 1910, and they made a note of all the people that were smiling and all of the people that weren't. And then they went to death records, and of course, virtually all of these people, when they were doing this research, were dead. But they actually found a significant difference between the lifespans of those people who were smiling and those that weren't. And the, in inverted commas, happy people had lived significantly longer. So there's some amazing studies that I found whilst researching it. I hope it's a book full of very practical, simple tips, but I hope it'll make a big difference to people.
Yeah, it's a bit like a pension, isn't it? Because the earlier you invest, I suppose, the more you have in the bank later.
That was exactly the way I make that analogy early on in the book, to say that, you know, if you start paying into your pension pot when you're young, then actually your retirement is looking pretty rosy. You know, it's looking good. If you leave it until later in life, you've still got something to gain, and so it's never too late to start. But if you never invest in a pension pot, you are storing up trouble for the future. And it's very similar, I think, with our health.
Yeah, so do I. And is it true, I know you mentioned things like dementia and Alzheimer's, that keeping your brain active is good, doing crosswords or word searches or something like that?
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the social networking. It, you're getting mental stimulation just by interacting with other people, but you're absolutely right. I say about the brain, you know, it's like any other part of your body. If you don't use it, you'll lose it. And the more we can keep our brains agile and doing a variety of different things. My mum and dad are 80, and they do a code word and a Sudoku every morning. They kind of race each other to see can win. And they laughed with me recently. We were out in Portugal with them last week, and they laughed at me and said, "Do you think we're mad?" I said, "No, I think it's absolutely brilliant."
So do I.
Keep it up.
So do I. My parents are late 70s, and they do things like that, Sudoku and crosswords. But my mum particularly, they walk everywhere. They're brilliant, far healthier than me. My mum particularly goes to yoga 3 times a week and has done for about 20 years. And I'm not kidding you, she's the healthiest person I know of her age.
Do you know, I think yoga is wonderful on all sorts of levels. I think it's very good for core stability and posture. There is one study that I talk about where if you can't stand on one foot for 10 seconds, then your risk of a fall and possibly early death is significantly greater than those people that can. So yoga is wonderful for that. But I think it's also great for relaxation and for sort of mindfulness. So it ticks so many boxes for me. I did read about one lady who is 100 and still taking yoga classes. How wonderful is that?
That's incredible. And these centenarians, these 100-year-old people, were they difficult to find, or are there lots of them about now?
Well, there are significantly more of them about. It was very easy to find centenarians. It was less easy to find centenarians who were living independently.
Really? Okay.
That took a bit more researching. And I think that's what the book is all about, is that actually you don't want to live to 100 sitting in a chair on your own with no stimulation. That's not what we're aiming for. But actually, you know, the people that I met, who are one lovely guy who I went to interview him in his home. He came to the door in a blazer and a shirt and tie, looked very smart. House was immaculate. He does all his own cleaning and gardening in the bungalow. And when I asked him what he did during his days, he said he's 101, this one, and he said, I get on my motorbike. I sort of nearly choked. I said, you what? He said, I've been riding a motorbike since I was 7 years old, because of course there weren't tests in those days. And he goes to a different nursing home every day of the week, and in his words, plays the piano for the old folk.
Bless
most of these people
him.
Are probably 20 years his junior, but he goes and he plays the piano for them.
What an amazing man. That's really, really lovely. And just one final question. Obviously, all these things you've said make a lot of sense. But do our genes predetermine it a little bit? You know, if you've got good genes and you've got parents that are living to an old age?
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
We can't get away from that. And at the moment, we can't change our genetics. I'm sure there'll come a time when we can. but what I say about that is two things. You know, if you've got longevity in your family, and a lot of the centenarians did have, not all, but a lot did, then that's a good thing. But actually, I think it's well worth taking some time just looking at your own family history, because although your genetics may mean, for example, that you are more prone to developing high blood pressure or diabetes or heart disease, that doesn't mean that you have to sit back and let that happen. You know, you've got two choices. You could do that, but then your chances of living a long and healthy life are less. Or you could say, okay, well, my genes are acting against me, and nature's dealt me a deck of cards here that isn't great, but what I can do is those simple things that might reduce my risk to counteract that. In that case, you can actually work with your genes to make sure that you don't develop those conditions, or to help you to not develop those conditions.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating stuff. I mean, you've written lots of books. I know you've got your Dr. Dawn's guides too, but this particular one is Live Well to 101, A Practical Guide to Achieving a Long and Healthy Life, which is exactly what Dawn and I are going to do. We're going to be living till 101. If you want to buy the book, it's actually on our website, tre.radio. It's by Dr. Dawn Harper, and I'm assuming from all usual outlets we can buy the book.
Yes, it's certainly online on Amazon, has been for a while now, and it's in various stores as well. So, I'd like to take the opportunity to wish everybody a long and healthy life, actually, because I think it is very achievable.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like something we can start at any age, and let's get on it right away. DrDawn.com is your website. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Dr. Dawn Harper. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Take care, stay healthy. Bye-bye.
Take care, and you. Bye. Bye-bye.